Tim, thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for coming in. Glad to sit down and chat with you. Some of my favorite times talking to Mike McCauley.
Oh, you're too kind. And I'm actually super excited because the roles are reversed this time. I get to hear your story.
See, I love this. I always joke, it's a lot less pressure being the guest and the host. So you're a little bit on the hot seat. I get to sit back and just share.
I love that. Right? You get to tell your story from that side. So, you know, real quick, before we even jump into your story, some fun facts on MarketScale. You guys have been an Inc. listed, you know, top growing company for many years, if not almost your entire existence.
Yeah, almost
right?
Our entire existence every year.
Okay. Yeah. And you guys are continuing to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Primary, your headquarters are here in Dallas, right?
Yep.
And then, but global presence, right? Global service?
Global service, absolutely.
Right. Okay. And do you have any favorite countries that you've been to or that you would like to go to?
I'll throw out Ireland.
Okay.
I think Ireland's my favorite. I'm looking to book another trip there and actually have some kind of strategic growth on the revenue side plans with Ireland that I hope to set up as well. So, you know, Ireland, it's kind of the tech hub of Europe. They've got mm-hmm. some tax benefits. So you see a lot of the European headquarters of tech companies there. It's just a really thriving country.
Yeah, Ireland's done a great job mm-hmm. over the past 20 or 30 years just to position themselves exactly as you said, as being a tech hub.
Yeah.
And because it's such a short skip across the pond, so mm-hmm. to speak, it's easy access.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those guys can sell.
Yes,
the Irish can sell, so
they're,
makes sense putting some sales tech jobs there.
Absolutely. So speaking of selling, right, that's kind of how you started in your career. But before that, you were big into competitive baseball, right,
oh,
all
yeah.
through high school, mm-hmm. into college, Longhorn.
Yeah.
Right. So give us a little bit of the background. Like, how did you end up in baseball, and how did you end up at University of Texas?
To be vulnerable here and tell the truth, it's little brother having to admit to big brother, but got into baseball because I saw my oldest brother, Ben, who started MarketScale with, really play baseball and saw how much he enjoyed it. And honestly, I just wanted time with my brother, right? His little brother, whatever your older brother does is the coolest thing. So got into baseball because of him and naturally just kind of took off. You know, it was a sport that wasn't per se natural to me, but I think some of maybe my natural athletic gifts played well to baseball. So yeah, played that through high school and played other sports, but naturally had the best shot of carrying my athleticism or my athletic career into college through baseball. And growing up in Texas, you know, the staple is, hey, University of Texas baseball, you know, that burnt orange and white helmet. And I was very fortunate enough to get recruited there. And the second I was recruited there, everywhere else went out of mind. It was
really?
It was Texas. And so signed there, and you know, it's Omaha season now. Was very fortunate to play in Omaha a couple times, and had some really great teammates, some teammates still playing in the leagues today, and been fun following their career. And you know, baseball's just shaped a lot of our family. And you know, I think it's a sport. I was having this conversation with the client yesterday about it's a unique sport because a lot of the lessons that you learn from baseball play so well into business and play so well into a career like sales. And yeah, I've just been really thankful for that time and the opportunities that I had in the sport.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong, didn't you play in the longest game ever played
wow,
in
good
college?
Wow, good memory. I did. Yeah, we actually made Cooperstown. We made the Hall of Fame for the longest collegiate baseball game ever played. I think at the time it was the longest game ever played. But
okay.
Yeah, it was, I think, 27 innings. So it was three games in one. And it was about an 8.5 hour baseball game, I think.
Okay.
So.
And was that your freshman year or?
That was my freshman year.
Okay.
And it was in the regionals to kind of set us up for Omaha.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing.
Okay.
So, and we won. That was the good news.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right. And then what was the worst heckling experience you had as a player?
Oh, gosh. Hats off to two schools, Texas A&M.
Okay.
Playing at that time, it was Olsen Field. And playing there, I mean, I got called all sorts of names, and it was all in good, clean fun. But and then LSU.
Okay.
LSU fans are unlike anything I've ever seen in my life, and I never want to see LSU fans ever again. So if LSU fans are listening, kudos to y'all because you can really rattle the opposing teams for sure.
That's fantastic. So does it get into your head at all? a little bit?
It does. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, then you try to play harder and prove them wrong. And then they know you're playing harder. And, it becomes kind of this little dance between you and the fans.
And then the ball five chant for the Aggies.
Oh,
right?
Yes. Yeah.
Did you ever get a chance to witness? You weren't a pitcher, but did you ever get a chance to witness that?
Oh, yeah. Witnessed everything. Yeah. Okay. They had this crew in left field. And I played left field up until like junior, senior year when I got to play more in center. But they had this crew that would pull up pickup trucks and they would back them up and they'd tailgate back there. And they would just wear out the left fielder. And it was incredible. Just 9 innings straight. And, you know, it was only about maybe 15 of them and then you. So it was very like you could hear everything that they're saying. And you try to engage them and make them your friend and try to be nice. And then they just double down.
But, oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
I've seen everything and anything playing against Texas A&M.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
and you're an Aggie, so.
Your family's an Aggie.
You're not an Aggie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Those are good times.
Okay. Well, we'll need to go down to one of those games and we can wear our posing jerseys. And,
yeah. I'd like that.
It'd be fun. So, all right. So, you made the transition from college into the professional world. How'd you make that jump? What'd you do?
Yeah.
And then how'd you end up here?
You know, I was hoping to get drafted out of Texas. Plans didn't go that way. I thought I would get picked up by a major league organization through like free agency. Plans didn't go that way. And I entered the work world. I did that for a few months and I just had this voice in my head that just said, you know, you're not done with baseball. And, you know, it was one of those life moments where I was like, do I ignore the voice and just kind of keep going because I've kind of missed the boat for my baseball career, or do I kind of listen to this crazy voice and say, all right, let's go play and let's try to end baseball on your own terms. So I did that. I ended up getting picked up to play an independent professional league here in Fort Worth with the Fort Worth Cats, who are no longer around, but legendary team. And it was probably the best summer of my life.
Really?
Yeah, I had, you know, grew out big facial hair. I had a mullet and it was just like, I think that was like my little summer of, I'm just gonna do something different. And, but had a great summer, could have continued to play, got offered to play the next season and I was good. It was very important to me for me to kind of close baseball out of my terms. Cause you know, there's always a day that you're told you can't play. And I wanted to know that I could keep playing, but I'm choosing to walk away. So walked away, went back into the business world and took a job in advertising sales and, you know, really enjoyed that, enjoyed the company and enjoyed the people. And there I learned a lot, really learned a lot about business and selling and just how core salesmanship is in any role within a business or any part of your life. And I did that for a few years before my brother and I, you know, really kind of departed and started, you know, Market Scale in this venture. And it was kind of a unique experience starting this. You know, we weren't starting Market Scale because we were passionate about marketing. We weren't starting it because we were, you know, just obsessed with content creation. We really started it based off the idea that we thought some areas of going to market for companies in B2B were broken. And we just saw this avenue of, you know, a lane for us to kind of run through and really support B2B companies, which was our passion. And 8.5 years later, you know, here we are, and we've been fortunate to work with some amazing brands, have even more amazing employees and colleagues, and you know, gotten to meet great leaders like you throughout the career and the journey.
You guys work with world-class firms, right? Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. I mean, if you get a chance to just talk about some of those brands, right? Go through that real quick, some of the brands that you guys have, right, as that you're fortunate enough to have earned as clients.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is, if somebody wanted to know what Market Scale is or who Market Scale is, how would you define that?
We'll start there. Really, we're a platform for community engagement. And if I kind of boil that down, what it means, we see really a company as a community. And the community is made up of their customers, their prospects, their employees, their engineers, you know, the associations that they're a part of. And in that community, there are all these amazing experts, all these thought leaders. It's our belief that to go to market today, instead of maybe, you know, say marketer writing blogs and writing case studies and buying a bunch of ads, we should tap into the minds of those experts. And when we need something technical, an engineer should create that content. When we need something to describe and share about the product, we should have a sales leader create that content. So we built a tech platform that enables companies to turn all those experts into content creators that then the marketing can kind of, team can kind of use and share that content out accordingly. So yeah, we've been fortunate to work with amazing brands, you know, Johnson Controls, Verizon, you know, Intel, and you know, several others. Mm-hmm. And some of our favorites are the smaller brands, right? Those good old, you know, mom and pop manufacturing companies that have, you know, been family owned for 50 years and, you know, they're in, you know, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So that's the beautiful thing about B2B is, you know, there's a wide range of companies and size of companies and what they do, and you get to meet a lot of cool people along the way.
Yeah, and one of those, right, is Jesse Cole from the Savannah Bananas.
Yeah.
Right, to bring baseball back together to market scale, right? So
that's been a lot of fun. You know, it's been so cool seeing what they've been able to do. You know, the relationship with Jesse, so my brother and I, our family grew up for a couple of years in Massachusetts. And my brother played on a little baseball team called the South Shore Baseball Club and the Sea Dogs. And anyways, Jesse and Ben were teammates.
Okay.
And, you know, so they were teammates. And, you know, when we lived on a boat for a couple of years down in South America, Jesse and his dad came down and visited us. And then we kind of, you know, friendship kind of broke ways. We moved to Texas and, you know, years of not talking. And then, you know, Jesse kind of pops up and, you know, Ben reached out to him, and you know, then there's been kind of some cool ways we've collaborated and have created some online courses together, and we've learned a lot from Jesse about, you know, turning your customers into fans and, you know, allowing your fans to do a lot of the marketing for you. And what he's doing is cool. Do you keep up with them?
Yeah.
Do you watch some of their highlights?
Oh, it's wild.
It's wild.
It is amazing, right? When you have the courage.
Yeah.
You have a clear vision mm-hmm. and then the courage to follow through on that, right? And the willingness to be wrong.
Yeah.
Right? It's amazing what you can do. And you own it, right?
Yeah.
So like
Absolutely.
That's one of the things that he does exceedingly well. He's abundantly clear in that he wants to create what he calls a frictionless environment mm-hmm. for the fans, right? It's where it's just a delightful experience, which is an overused phrase, but the removing all the friction points.
Yeah.
And then he'll try anything to make that happen. And knowing that some of it's not going to work.
Absolutely.
And when it doesn't work, he's like, hey, I'm sorry. What can we do to fix that? Mm-hmm.
And he will totally hurt revenue streams to enhance client experience. You know, he tells a story in the online learning course we built with him about how, you know, most baseball fields that you go to, even at the major league level, you'll see all these ads in the outfield, right? All these sponsors and ads, and especially in like collegiate and minor league fields, you'll have like local businesses. And he thought that was a bad fan experience because you look out, you see this beautiful baseball field, then you just see like ad. So he literally canceled all that. And he literally walked away from revenue coming in. And he just bet that, hey, I'm gonna make every decision be fans first. And if I don't think this is a fans first decision, you know, I'm not going to do it. Or if I think we're making money from it, but it's not elevating the fan experience, then we're going to walk away from that money.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. And look at what he's done. He's built, I think, probably the most thriving community in the sports world right now.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. He's turned the sport on its head.
Absolutely.
Right?
He's disrupted baseball.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, when he goes into that course, right, which is essentially like a master's course. And by the way, if you're listening to this, I would highly recommend log into Market Scale and find that course, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's fantastic. Because Jesse even goes in, like, they took a trip on a cruise,
yep.
right? And they're like, oh, okay, this is an all-in thing. I don't get nickel and dimed while I'm here, right?
And he brings that, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, well, your ticket gets you concessions.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one of his stories was, you know, people said, well, what if the fans come in and eat, you know, a dozen hamburgers?
He says, like, let them.
Yeah.
Yeah. His rule, and I might butcher exactly how he says it, but his rule is think about like what is normal and do the complete opposite.
Yeah.
And it's worked for him.
Oh, so. Yeah. It's amazing. So I love that. And that's stuff that we've tried to employ at our firm as well. It's like, okay, what can we do to make that experience for our clients just remove all the friction points. And what's wild is how often people anticipate and expect friction.
Yep.
Right? And then when it's not there, they're like, wait, something's wrong. What are you doing?
Yes.
How are you taking advantage of me?
I know.
We're not.
Those got to be some of the most fun moments, though, because it's like, seriously, we're not. Like, there's nothing else to it. And it's kind of cool to be able to have that stamp.
Yes. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, as a matter of fact, this isn't all you can eat buffet. You can come back. And they're like, oh, really? Okay.
That's the way to be.
Yes.
The Jesse Cole mindset. There we go.
It's fantastic. All right. So, you built Market Scale, and you said it's a community, right? But it didn't start out that way.
No.
Right? When it started out, what was the idea? You said it was just to fix B2B go-to-market.
Yeah. So, you know, we saw, my brother and I had come from the advertising world and, you know, had a great career in that and loved it. But we just saw companies spending so much on ads, and it was, you know, a way to kind of solve their problems. But really nothing was solved. You're just kind of renting exposure. You were renting a patch, per se. So at that point, it was 2015, and if you remember Inbound, right? That's when like HubSpot was blowing up, and it was all about, you know, content marketing, which at that time was really just blogs and downloadable case studies. So when we started Market Scale, you know, we had no outside funding. You know, we put in a certain amount that my brother had, and it wasn't a lot, and we made a pact. We said, hey, when that hits zero, we're done. We're not going to take outside, you know, money, give up ownership. We're not going to dilute, you know, what we own. We're not going to bring in outside voices who give us money to now control. We have a vision, and when this hits zero, we're done. So what that meant is we had to start selling, right? We had to get customers in, and then we had to retain customers because that's the most profitable way to grow. So we just kind of attached ourselves to that world of inbound marketing. A lot of times at back then, companies didn't have writers or authors or access to tools to help them create content. So we kind of filled that patch where we would, you know, write blogs and create infographics. And instead of going kind of an a la carte way or maybe like a traditional agency way, we went more subscription route. So they would pay for a subscription and, you know, they'd get X amount of content. And that's kind of how we started is, you know, we did that and we hired sales teams and account managers as we grew and grew and grew and grew. But, you know, we constantly live by the rule that we have to disrupt ourselves.
Yeah.
Constantly. You know, I think Clayton Christensen talks a lot about, hey, if you don't disrupt yourself, somebody else will.
That's it.
And, you know, it's been fun. I think probably a bit sometimes challenging for the sales teams at Market Scale because, you know, if you think about the adoption curve, we're always playing with people kind of on the early adopters to kind of the people following, never the laggards. And, yeah, so that was kind of our first kind of addition, I'd say, of Market Scale. It was very traditional content marketing.
Okay. And then did you choose to disrupt yourself or did something happen and cause that?
So from there, as we had capital, we didn't disrupt ourselves, but we added kind of, I guess, more enterprise capabilities like on-site video. And, you know, that's when we started to hire a lot of videographers, video editors. And we had a very large footprint here at our corporate headquarters at that point. We probably had, you know, maybe 65 employees here every day. And, you know, a lot of those on the creative side. And essentially we were doing, I think, over 500 video productions around the world.
Okay.
At that point, that was a core part of our subscription. And that's the big ticket, right? So, you know, the blogs and infographics were there, but much smaller ticket compared to the big enterprise, anywhere you want to film sort of piece. COVID hits. And COVID hit at a funny time because where we are right now and the whole other wing going that way didn't exist. We didn't have this office space. And the idea was because we were doing so much production, we were going to have a lot more videographers and a lot more video capabilities from 3D and on-site and animation videos. And this was going to be full of people. Well, we signed our lease. COVID hits. Well, we can't come in. We can't use our office. Everybody's got to be remote. However, we're paying twice as much rent. And we can't even really hire now because our biggest item, video production, is shut down because we can't go on site anywhere. So that is a moment where we said, okay, well, if our client's main kind of golden item is on-site video and we can't go on-site, clients are going to jump ship pretty quick because marketing budget's going to be the first thing that gets taken away in COVID and in this uncertain time, and we're going to go along with it. So we pivoted there. We didn't really disrupt, we pivoted, and what we decided to do was turn literally almost all of our, half of our office space into studios like this. And we decided that market scale at that point was gonna be the platform that helped the world continue. You know, my church had a great line, when the world hit pause, the church hit play, because churches started to do a lot of live broadcasts and streaming. So we said, okay, let's allow these companies to see market scale as the platform that helps them hit play.
Yeah.
And allows them to elevate and replace trade shows they'd be at with their own events. And it was an amazing pivot. You know, companies were launching products through market scale and going live. They were replacing trade shows and events going live. And literally, I mean, we had companies almost at any hour of the day using market scale to go live internationally. And, you know, that was something that we loved and enjoyed so much that, you know, if you come into our headquarters like you are today, you still see half of our office space are these sorts of studios to support our clients.
And yeah,
it was amazing because we could take that, you know, real estate cost we had and start to leverage it to, you know, support clients and create an experience and, you know, create some cash flow even for market scale.
That's pretty amazing mm-hmm. when you think about it, right? And it's a, again, that's a bold move.
It was a bold move.
And that also, I'm imagining, required you to restructure the organization, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that becomes disruptive for team members and mm-hmm. everything else. How did that play out?
You know, COVID kind of then ended.
Right.
On-site videos kind of came back into play, and it was pretty cool because now we had this whole offering, right? Now
right.
you look at our subscription continues to elevate. It has more enterprise tools and resources. So, you know, our costs go up to manage, but then our price, you know, selling goes up and our clients get happier because there's more tools. So all is good. We then kind of decided at that point, hey, if we don't disrupt ourselves, yeah, somebody will disrupt us. So let's at least control this disruption. So a couple of years ago, we thought, you know what, instead of going all in on this live and on-site, let's almost just totally disrupt our business and say, hey, the video creation can come from your own employees.
Okay.
You don't need a big video production team to come in. You don't need our support. Your team has webcams, your team has iPhones. They create content every day in their personal life. Let's enable them to do it in the business life. And that was wild because, you know, at that point we started to really, I guess, cannibalize a lot of our business. And it was a scary time, but it was a time where we could step up and really guide our clients. So I forgot what year it was, maybe 2022, but we told our clients, hey, at the end of this year, we are not gonna be, you know, authoring blogs and creating infographics for you anymore. It's not because we don't wanna do it, it's because that's not what's really gonna help you.
I remember hearing that.
Yeah,
yes.
You were probably one of the people that were shocked, because yeah. You were either a client at that time, or you're just, you know, you were still good friends at that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, and clients didn't like it. They said, but I hired you to write blogs, I hired you to create infographics, and it was very hard for us to say, we know, but there's a better way, and like, come with us, like, let us show you. And I mean, what you could guess happened. Clients removed their contracts. They didn't renew. So bit by bit, you know, that kind of ongoing year over year business that we could rely on disappeared. And it felt pretty lonely. It was lonely because you're leading this charge, you're trying to bring B2B with you, and they're saying, well, I like my blogs, like my infographics. And it was scary. We also trying to change our business model. We went more to a community base, which is kind of how this question started, where we took a lot of the video talent and the graphical artists and editors and everything, and we built an amazing network of talent outside of the office walls. So now we've got our HQ in Dallas, but we've got, you know, our remote community located in every major market, and they're able to work with us on, you know, these projects and clients that we were able to assign them to. So we disrupted our clients' contracts. We disrupted our kind of way to go to market and support them. And it's probably the best move we've ever done because we've been able to support even more creatives in the community. We've got hundreds and hundreds of creatives in our community that we're able to support and collaborate and create media with. And then a lot of the clients that left, they're now back in the ecosystem, and they've never been happier because they've scaled their content, they've empowered their people, and you know, they've cut a lot of their costs. And it's been a really amazing journey. And the disruption, although it had a shaky period, is what's going to set this company up for, you know, I hope the next, you know, the next 8.5 years and beyond.
Okay, so that one worked out. Are there any decisions you guys have made or that you've made, right, where things just went sideways?
Oh man, all the time. Yeah,
right.
All the time. That's the fun part of, you know, being an entrepreneur. Right. You know, something we teach at Market Scale is, you know, we tell everybody to be an entrepreneur over their area. So like our sales team, you know, like David sees himself as the CEO of Market Scale Healthcare. Katie sees herself as the CEO of Market Scale Hospitality. So because of that, yeah, we've had a lot of team members come up with ideas and things that you think are going to be a home run and just absolutely aren't. Maybe the market's not ready. Maybe we didn't execute. You know, we're fortunate enough to where we haven't had one that is like, you know, we've then had to let go of like, you know, 10 employees because of like cash flow problems. They're a lot smaller than that. But yeah, being a young, scrappy company, there's always a, maybe it's a new product, maybe it's, you know, a new form of communication with clients and, you know, you name it. But yeah, there's been a few.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was there any one that stands out in your mind where you're like, okay, this went wrong and we really had to double down and we had to find a way to fix that? And what'd you do to fix it?
I'm trying to think if there's been one where we've had to double down to fix. I'd say this, it wasn't necessarily a fix. We got away from our core at one point. Okay. And we started to try to do like content boosts for our clients, which falls under the bucket of advertising.
Yes.
Our whole core has always been like kind of the opposite of advertising, partially because we have friends in that world and we didn't want to like compete, and partially just we wanted to have our own lane. There was a time where we partnered with a company where we could kind of resell kind of boosts, like impressions on client content. And, you know, we sold a couple of them. But they weren't managed right. The team managing it, you know, wasn't obviously kind of naturals or advertising wasn't innate to them. And the partner that we had basically just said, "You guys, you're like our worst vendor with this. Like, you don't sell it. The maintaining and management of it has been too tough." And they're like, "We're gonna cut bait." And we were kind of honestly glad because we just looked at ourselves and we just said, "We've built this whole company on the idea of like." Organic and earned media, but yet we're kind of now putting paid boost behind it, and we kind of got away from our core. It wasn't a long period; we're talking about 90 days.
Right.
But that was one where I think we just said, "All right, look, any ideas where we've had of selling sponsorships in our publications or banners in our publications, we're not the advertising company. Let's leave that at bay."
That's perfect.
Yeah,
I like that. Mm-hmm. And then, as you think about the culture here at Market Scale. What are some of the defining characteristics of culture, right? What's it take to be successful, right? I guess both as a team member, if you're an employee, right? Or as a client, right? When the ideal cultural type of element within a client.
Yeah, this is a great question. So, you know, we had this great group come in and really help us with that. You know, because we're a young company that's growing, we had a lot of change. A lot of change into structure, a lot of change into product. You know, at one point we had, I think, probably about maybe 15 to 20 account managers that were here at Market Scale. That's something we took to the community, where we now have literally, like, I think like 110 account managers who are just amazing. They're amazing professionals, and you know, it's been way more scalable to support our clients in that format. But because there's a lot of change, you know, we had this group come in where they basically interviewed a lot of employees, a lot of leadership, even interviewed clients, to your point. And they just asked really good questions. And they basically put together a brief of, all right, after we've talked to people, these are the themes that we continue to hear and see. And that was a neat exercise because a lot of the folks at Market Scale got to be in the room and we got to kind of hear that and then kind of build out actual phrases and pillars that define Market Scale. And, you know, what I would say for someone to thrive in this environment, You know, you kind of really have to follow some of those pillars. You know, we've talked a lot about crave knowledge. Because we're constantly changing, we're at the front end of where B2B is headed. You've got to crave knowledge. You got to crave that excitement of knowing what you're talking about and then relaying that and almost being like a professor to clients. Challenge the status quo. You've got to want to challenge the status quo. And if you have that in you, you know, you're going to succeed here. Clients, we want you to just be able to be guided and then be that guide for your company. You know, we usually kind of work with one or two folks within a company and then they kind of go be that light. You got to want to kind of take on that responsibility and not see it as more work, but really less work, because you're kind of becoming the conductor and now you create a symphony of media creators for you. You also, I think, have to think like an entrepreneur a little bit, because a lot of people think like an entrepreneur in their departments within the company. Naturally, when we bring people in, we want them to be able to think of that ownership. And I'd say those are kind of what drive the culture. You know, we've got a lot of young folks here, a lot of great minds. And you know, we've built kind of this great team here at HQ that is able to support and work with this remote community. And it's been a really cool mesh between both those worlds.
You know, one of the interesting things that we've realized when we talk to our clients, especially if we're talking to new prospective clients, mm-hmm. is we'll even lead with what our core values are. Like, it's like one of our first slides when we talk about the company. And got a lot of feedback on that. And some people were like, well, you should lead with the value prop. And I was like, yeah.
Interesting.
But we lead with our values. And they're, but most of the ones that get it and the ones, the clients that have stuck with us, they really appreciate it. They're like, I like that. Mm-hmm. And because then what we know is we've got good, strong value alignment.
Yeah.
And if we've got good, strong value alignment, we can work out the other details.
100%.
Right?
It's like a marriage. Right?
Yes.
If you have the same values, and you can probably build a lot of success on that.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's worked out exceedingly well for us.
What are some of those values? Like, what are the themes?
For us,
yeah.
It's trust, truth, transparency, and teamwork. So
was that 4 T's?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's it all starts with trust. You have to trust. Mm-hmm. And that's an inherent trust. I got that from Patrick Lencioni's book. And if you don't have that core inherent trust,
yeah.
the ability to communicate from a vulnerable position of like, hey, maybe I can't do this, or own when you come up short, then we're not going to be able to get out of the gates.
Yeah.
Because what we do, like our value proposition is we help you get there faster,
mm-hmm.
right? It's we help you define what your destination is, and then we help you get there faster. Well, we can't help you get there faster if there's no trust, right?
That's a good point.
And so, and then the other piece of it is transparency. For us, one of the things that we found was we need to be transparent about our process and our client's mm-hmm. process, because we found where gears will fail to mesh is like in decision making, is if the client has an unspoken decision maker, things will just bog down. And we're like, wait, what happened? We're off schedule. This isn't working. That's not going right. We're supposed to get there faster, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, well, it's on so-and-so's desk. It's like, wait, we didn't know about that. And then we find out, oh, it's not just so-and-so. It's two other people, right, that are involved. And it's like, okay. So we learned that we've got to understand their culture of decision making as a process, and who the true decision makers are on stuff. Because even if we're working with the senior executive for that function or for that business, there may be someone else in the organization that is the expert,
yeah.
that is the deferred to decision maker for whatever
is.
And so we've got to be transparent about that.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things. And then, you know, the whole notion of teamwork. None of us is as good as all of us, and that we all work together.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely critical for us.
Man, that's good. And I'll say you're one of the best at always having a roadmap. I remember when we worked together, like as us as like your vendor, you're always like, all right, guys, I need to like help me build a roadmap. And
yes.
I'd always be like, oh, hey, we're more of a platform than the builder. And then you would just jump in and. So yeah, you have such a good skill on being able to your point get people there faster, and I think it has a lot to do with the roadmaps you're able to build and that's probably the foundation off those four T's.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. So that's worked out well for us. And then I guess, you know, the other piece, and we didn't talk about this ahead of time, so feel free to call foul. And we, you know, faith is a big part of your life.
It is, yeah.
Right? So how has that played out for you in making some of these decisions, right, and as it relates to business, right? You've taken some big leaps of faith, mm-hmm. right? How has your faith in God played into that?
I mean, it's so core. It's everything, honestly. Right. You know, I see market scale really as a platform of God's work, you know, giving people jobs, creating opportunities, helping support our clients, you know, create more of their jobs. So any success, any failure, you know, I kind of see every day as my daily bread. Yeah. And whatever comes, I know that there's a bigger plan to it, good or bad. You know, it's funny. You know, I'll tell this in Bible study. I'll share this with my fiance, but I don't usually share moments like this. But, you know, if, let's say, you know, I'm in charge of revenue. Let's say revenue's down. There's kind of two ways I respond. There's, you know, the way of I can control more. Like, I need more phone calls. I need more meetings. I need to fly this. I need to go to this trade show. And I'll go more and more and more. And it's like, you know, in baseball, gripping the bat tighter. And it never gets better. And it only honestly gets better when I realize the mission that I believe Market Scale is on, that, you know, that God has bigger plans than what I can control. And, you know, maybe the mission is just to fall flat. Maybe the mission is for this to become something huge that supports a lot of people. But ultimately, when I just, you know, give my day back to God, you know, he shows me how real he is.
Yeah.
And he shows how much he shows up. And it's been so core. It's been very blessed and thankful to be able to have that in my day to day.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. Mm-hmm. It relates to that, right? It's like the tighter you try to hold on, mm-hmm. right, the worse it gets.
Yeah.
Right. And then the more you loosen up and you're like, okay, now
it
doesn't mean forsake your work.
No, not at all. You're probably going to work more. It's just knowing that there's something bigger at work and that, you know, that you're not actually in control.
Yeah, are you familiar with Inky Johnson?
I'm not, no.
Phenomenal guy. I would highly recommend you look him up. He was a baseball player, I think, a football player for the University of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And in one of his last football games for the University of Tennessee, he was injured, like catastrophically injured, ended up paralyzing one of his arms. It's completely immobile to this day, but he's a speaker, and he's a motivational speaker, and he's got a perspective on things. And he said, if you can give yourself fully to the process while completely surrendering the outcome,
that's so perfect.
You will achieve amazing things.
That's perfectly said.
Yeah.
Man, I wish I originally said that. That's, that is so well said, and it's so true. Right. It's so true. Really good book too, tied to faith and work, is Every Good Endeavor by Timothy Keller.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, highly recommend it. I'm reading it right now, and it's a good way to kind of reshape kind of my mindset whenever it comes to kind of work and faith and bringing them together.
I'm a big fan of Keller. So
he's
good.
He's the GOAT. Not to overuse the term GOAT.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, he's pretty amazing from that perspective. So. All right, one other quick thing regarding business. One of the things you were talking about is, like, you guys try to stay on Jeffrey Moore's, you know, crossing the chasm, right, in the early adopter.
Oh, yeah.
And early majority stage, right, with your clients. So when you guys are putting together your ideal customer profile list, are you looking for companies that exhibit that behavior, or are you looking for executives that exhibit that behavior?
Ooh. I don't know if we're looking for necessarily either. We're just looking for them to kind of respect, I think, the world that we're in.
Right.
For example, we could have a $500 million amazing B2B manufacturing company in the critical infrastructure space. And when we go to their website, we might see the last video they ever created was in like 2017. And they have a blog, but it's 2 years outdated. And they have like stock images on their website. I think a lot of people would say oh my gosh, what a great person to sell to because they need so much help.
Right.
Right. Oh, we could come in and change these videos and evolve this content. Or the opposite. We think, look, that person's, when you make that phone call, they're not going to respect. They're not going to respect what you do. It's almost like, let's say I worked at a BMW lot, and somebody drives into my lot with a Mercedes or a Tesla. They respect cars. I have a better shot of selling a BMW to them compared to if they drive up in something that's, you know, 10 years outdated and they don't respect cars. So we have more of that mindset. So we like to look for, hey, is the company keeping up with creating a lot of media? Are they creating a lot of content? They're going to respect what we do. And now we're going to show them a way to kind of evolve and add even more scalability. Okay. So I'd say we more look for that. They don't need to be the most cutting edge, or they don't have to have this big cutting edge executive, but are they currently in the world of creating? Well, we can show you another way, or a cooler way maybe to create.
Do you also happen to look for executive transitions, right? If somebody, case in point, right, you've got that company that you were talking about where things are a bit outdated, and they've hired somebody new to come in, right, that does exhibit those behaviors. Is that?
Absolutely.
That creates that fertile opportunity?
100%. And those are some of our best calls is, you know, we believe in cold calling here. We've got a really great sales team, and they do a good job of just conducting business in their industries. And part of conducting is just that natural cold outreach. And we always get excited when, we do catch an executive or a leader that just took a role and they came from somewhere and they, you know, we're doing it and implementing it there, and now they're bringing it. We tend to really gravitate there.
All right, speaking of which, if you had to pick the top two or three functions that typically align best with market scale, what would those be?
We definitely see two. Marketing, obviously, is the layup. And then the second biggest use case is HR.
Okay, how so?
Because we're a platform for engagement, and part of HR is they want to empower employees, celebrate new hires, right? Create kind of content from the fun events they put on. Make it easier for the executives to be able to teach and lend advice to employees and so on. So HR loves market scale because we become that vehicle that makes it easy for them to kind of connect the people, especially in this remote economy, right? Yeah. So many companies are hybrid or fully remote now. The only way to connect employees is through this video media, and we can kind of be that vehicle that makes it so easy for them.
Well, yeah, and I would think that there's the dailiness of it, but then there's also the periodicity of it in the sense of, like, there's certain days out of the year where companies will have like a volunteer day or some sort of celebration, and if you can democratize the collection of that information, right, and have everybody's phone work, then all of a sudden you can create a montage of that day that lives on in perpetuity.
Oh, 100%. We do something here at MarketScale called Summer of Service, where like this weekend, for example, we're going to The Bridge, which is a homeless shelter here downtown. We're going to, hand out donuts and greet them and give them coffee and, just talk to them, hang out. And, it's not really meant for opportunity to create content, but I imagine people will naturally capture content, and then they could upload that into MarketScale Studio, and then our director of HR, Emily, can have a pretty cool video showing, not even really putting it on LinkedIn, more just showing the people that weren't there, hey, look at what MarketScale, did with The Bridge this weekend, and just kind of shows our community that, we don't just say build an engaged community, we actually get out in this community of Dallas and live it too.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And then within marketing, is there a sub functional area within marketing that, or title that is typically, hey, this is great, this is where we typically engage?
Really, director and VP and above. We find that, they're controlling budgets. We find, they've been tasked with, hard revenue goals that they need to support the sales team in, or they've been tasked and, maybe moving away from trade shows to cut on costs, and they need new ways to go. And we find that those folks tend to have the vision, a unique vision between what leadership's asking them to do and be a part of, as well as needing to be the one who actually executes on creating it.
That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. All right, if people want to get in touch with you or get in touch with MarketScale, what's the best way?
Super easy. There's a contact form on the homepage of the site. Very easy. Email me, tim@marketscale.com. Call the front desk, ask for Tim. We're very easy to get a hold of.
LinkedIn.
And LinkedIn, yeah. You know, Monday through Monday. Weekends aren't even blocked. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fantastic. Well, thank you. I appreciate this.
Yeah.
This was awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for, you know, interviewing me and let me tell a lot of my story. And yeah, I remember I had you on my show, I think probably like 3 years ago.
Yes.
And so it's fun to be able to now be in this seat, like I said at the start.
I'm excited. Is there anything you wanted to talk about that we didn't?
No, I don't think so. If there is, we'll do a part two.
I love it.
We'll let it be a surprise for everybody.
Perfect.
All awesome.
Right. Tim, thank you.
Thank you, Mike. You're the man.
All right.
Thank you.